Okay, so hi everyone, it's Liam Murray from Case Dimensions. This session is called Making Service Manager Enterprise. Our approach to the service manager space is very IT service management aligned. We've recently did workshops with the ITSMF in the UK. They're the group who were initially commissioned to write the ITIL standard. So their view on the market is that customers need to move service management closer to the customer. So whom it is you're serving. If you're a managed service provider, it's to your customers. If you're a company, it's closer to your employees. So their view on the market is that you'll get more value out of your IT management team if you start pulling together a service knowledge management system. And it's all about taking the data that sits in the CMDB and making it usable in a customer-focused way. So they're deliberately pulling the knowledge management system out of the back-end systems. Although the data is going to come from here, they're deliberately showing it being closer to the customer through the self-service portal. And the self-service portal is really where I'm going to start today's demonstrations. There's a number of scenarios that we see customers asking help with when they're using Service Manager. And we as Case have been in the market since 2009. We were working with Microsoft on a technology adoption program before the product was even released. So we're hearing common requests from customers, and we're filling, I'd say, 95 to 96% of the gaps. There's very little we don't do that customers want in a service management framework. So we sit very much inside a service manager and extend its native capabilities. So for self-service, why do you have a self-service portal? Whom is self-service for? And we ask this question because we're not the only vendor in the market that does self-service. What we say is there are other portals out there. They're modeled on Azure. Azure is the wrong model for employees. If you look at Microsoft's own website, their training portal is very different to Azure, and that's so that you can drive user adoption and allow your employees to get the value of what the portal is. So we say that the self-service portal for service managers should not be Azure in relation to its blueprint. It should be aligned for your customers or your employees. So our focus has been to empower the employee. So I'll just jump into the demo environment and show you a demo of our portal product. So when you log into our portal product, it's not projecting. For some reason, it's not projecting now, Fabian. Sorry. It was working fine before. Fix that. Could we just, as you pull it together for putting up online, can we just edit that a little bit and join it? Yeah, okay, super. So now I'll jump into the self-service portal just to demonstrate how our self-service portal looks. And it's done the same. then. Okay, so this is the self-service homepage. What you can see is that there are different links to different business departments on the homepage. This is useful if you're allowing self-service across your business. The finance team and the HR team and the facilities management team, they also need self-service. So you're already licensed across your organization for service manager. Every employee is entitled to use it. So this basically gives you a framework where you can service the other business departments as well as the IT team. One of our best clients has over 300 analysts concurrently in service manager, where they're using this for IT, HR and finance, and they've got portals specific for each. Now, the way the homepages are set up for the different teams is that within Service Manager, you have a feature called Lists. And if you open the service offering category list, you can see that we have IT, Finance, HR, and Facilities. And you can add an item to extend the list. And when you do, it basically creates a new landing page. It's as simple as that. And everything I demo will illustrate that what we're doing here is zero code for you. It's all configuration. There's no coding. So you also see that the announcements is enabled within the homepage. So again, the announcements is a standard feature in Service Manager. And we have basically just created some announcements which are projected to the homepage on self-service. It's useful if you've got a site outage or exchange goes down. You can basically put out an announcement so that all users know that there is something that you're working on. When you click on the homepage, it pulls you through to what you have configured for self-service for that specific department. So within Service Manager, there are features called service offerings and request offerings, and these reside within your service catalog. Again, they're standard features of Service Manager. So for service offerings, you can see procurement, advice and guidance, error advice and guidance, and user administration. If we go to the front home pages, we see the same as blue boxes. Now if I open the service offering procurement, you will see that there are a number of things which get linked to the service offering, but the request offerings related are, I want to order a printer, I want to order a mobile phone. If I close that out and come back, as we click on the different service offerings, they pull back the request offerings that have been associated to the blue box, to the service offering. So if we look at procurement, the two options we had were, I want to order a mobile phone and I want to order a printer. For ones which are most frequently accessed as request offerings, i.e. things that people are requesting the most or things which people are having issues with the most, you can project them onto the home pages so that it's easier to navigate and easier to get information so that the user provides self-service. If we look at, I want to order a mobile phone, the questions that you publish in a request offering appear against the request offering. So in this instance, someone might be requesting something on behalf of someone else or on behalf of themselves. In this instance, it's a mobile phone, so I'll choose which country I'm requesting it for. So we'll choose Ireland. The reason for the phone might be business, personal, or both. And in different geographies, that has tax implications for employees. Here in the portal, you can see that we've grouped certain questions or certain options under a header. This is useful if you have an employee onboarding process where you might ask a lot of questions and also allow them to state why they're requesting the phone, a replacement, a renewal. If they're in certain geographies, they might have an existing phone. So I'll choose replacement if I'm putting in a phone number. And if we put in just a number so that your asset management stays up to date, and we'll choose what network the SIM is for if it's a new. If you had a tax form or something else, you have the ability to embed text as a URL and allow the user to download a document, say from SharePoint, and upload it then into the request offering. And that will come into the work item ticket as an attached item, attached file with unrelated items. If we click next, we get a summary, and then we can submit the request. Now, that works for all the different types of request offerings that you can write. And in this instance, we've got a service request 2418. I'll just come back to that. Yes? Yes. So, that's a good point to go to the request offerings at the back. So, within the back end of Service Manager, we've also extended the function request offerings. So, Microsoft have invested and created request offering. What you've just asked would normally be facilitated by request offerings, but we've also extended our request offerings to do some extra things. Embedding the URL links and having headers are two examples. We also allow you to configure prompts against the questions that are asked. So the projection here is basically whatever way the machine's projecting, it's locking out the data variables within the box. But you can do what you asked. Let me just
I know this from Service Manager, but my question is, I can see it also in the portal that if I set a field mandatory, so a red.
Yeah. So I just chosen the wrong request offering in the demo. So the one I chose had no variables configured against it. So the mobile phone one I just filled out, if I look at the variables, you get different variables appearing. The user prompts, so there were five variables that we were configuring. Here you've got the choice of required, which makes it red, which means it's mandatory. Optional means it's for text only. And in some instances, you'll publish information where it's just for the display purposes, i.e. you're advising the user what to do within the request offering. The types of prompts that you can project, you can see there's quite a number of options. Date, if you're asking someone what date they expect something by. You could decimal, file attachments, integer. And in this way, you're controlling how it is presented and what is being presented on the request offering back in the portal. Here you even have query results. You can look up a database and Service Manager and return items in a table based on rules that you write. Now, as you saw, as I was answering the questions, one of the questions was, what country are you from? And what we've did here is we have configured some prompts and mapped the prompts. So here we can see configure description. So the variables are basically the question, and underneath the answer is prompted. So in this way, not only can you ask your employee or your customer a question, you can also hide text so that the user doesn't see it. But when the information comes into the service desk, there's advice and guidance for the analyst, so the analyst knows how to treat the request from the user. I've requested the phone. I'm based in Ireland. It's a different asset manager in Ireland than it is in USA or Central Europe. So here, where we've got answer, if Ireland assigned to Patrick, if in USA, Josh, and if Central Europe assigned to Niels, when I open up the service request, you'll see where that data has come into the ticket. Another feature we have did is with Service Manager, on a standard form, there are three text fields in the form. So what we've did is we've extended an extra 50 fields into the class and extended that through into the portal. So you can ask a lot more questions. You're not limited in relation to the number of questions you can ask. The data, when it comes in, is not hidden in the database. It appears, as you will see, in the description field, so it's easy for the analyst to decide what to do. So I just come out of the request offering. So in this instance, if we go to the service requests, the last one that we raised, you basically have the questions and answers here being mapped into the description field. And as you can see, choose which location, choose your location, and I've chosen Ireland. And then underneath, we've got the prompt for the analyst, if Ireland, how to treat the request. So it just makes things usable. A lot of other consultancy companies will also advise clients to loop traffic into Orchestrator. And that makes it gives you an administrational overhead and makes it more complex for you to manage. Here you can see a decision activity. And this is quite different to the standard tool. So this is another extension that we have made for the management pack, or for Service Manager. So in this instance, we're saying if the user is a director, provision the phone. There's no need for approval. So the criteria is that if the affected user contains director to treat the ticket in a certain way. Now, as you can see in the logic here for writing the decision, we've made it what we call advanced criteria. So you can use and or statements, whereas with the tool of standard, you can only write and statements. So we're giving you the ability to write advanced expressions. So if it contains director, the activity is a review activity. And the true path is that you do not approve if the person's name is director, or the title has director. And the false path is that if the user does not have the name director in their job title, they must get approval. So the activity then becomes an approval activity if the user does not have director. So normally to make a decision like that and go down different paths, you would be using Orchestrator. We're allowing you to keep the data in Service Manager. It makes it a lot more simple from reporting, because you've got one database that holds all your data. Here you can see the different reviewers. In this instance, I'm an approver for myself, but that's just so I can go back to the portal and show how we present this data now in the self-service portal as well. So you made a comment about Service Manager being a little slow. That was a request offering, writing a configuration update into the database. You'll see as I go through this, it's actually pretty fast the way we have it, and you'll see some of the management packs that we have to allow that. But if we go back to my overview, within my overview, the user has the ability to look at existing requests that they have open, and they also have the ability to approve or view things that they're responsible to approve. So we've been testing, so you can see quite a few tickets in here, but we can expand out. It's easy for the user to see what status the ticket is in, when it was created, what their answers were to the questions, what the activities are. So approved cell phone, it's in progress, and it's Liam Murray who is going to approve. So now the user knows to chase Liam Murray instead of calling the help desk and have your team chase them, chase a business user for them. If there are attached files, you would see them. And it is possible to download the attached files, update them, and upload them again. And the log of the ticket would catch the fact that that had been done. And then you also can update the request. So you can add comments. We're seeing field engineers in certain companies use this, where they finish the work, and then they update the ticket to say, complete resolve the ticket. They put resolve in square brackets, and we have another workflow tool that picks that up and resolves the ticket on their behalf. So if I go back and just show the feature for approval, my activities is where the approval occurs. The service request. And here we can see approve or reject. And if the user wants to give additional, see additional information or update it before he approves or rejects, they can do so. As they approve, they're asked for some comments. And then they OK it. So that's a very quick demo on the self-service portal. You can see that there is the ability to search. So we've extended in the request offerings and in the knowledge articles, the ability to put in keywords so that they be returned on the portal should someone search for the word. In some instances, the portal is based on Careboss single user sign-on. So if users are on your network, they're brought straight in. In some instances, clients have people on factory floors where they share desks. So in that instance, we've got a web-based interface for users to authenticate and come in on as well. So users just sign out as they finish. Another employee can use it afterwards. Is there anything, like we've modeled it to be simple and clean, but highly functional. And we think it's very easy for the employees to adopt this. We typically see the clients push out a 3-minute video to educate the users on how to use this, and adoption is rapid. And when you consider that 70% of the ticket volume in a service desk is service requests, this addresses a high value area for any service desk. Okay, so the next area I'm going to show is how do you actually manage Service Manager in Service Manager. And what we mean by that is any company I go to, there's always a bit of friction between the service desk team and the infrastructure team. There always seems to be just a little bit of camaraderie. So the issue for the service manager administrator is that in setting up his teams and groups, out of the box, they work off Active Directory groups, which means you have to speak to the infrastructure team to set your environment up for you. They have to create AD groups for all the groups in the tool. Now, what we have done is we have created a function which is called create team group. So what this does is this, when you run your AD connector, it pulls all the users into Service Manager. Now you can create groups of users and associate those groups of users to a list property inside the ticket. So if we open the list, we can see the selection was incident, tier queue, and an option of all the lists, all the data properties under this list get returned. We've chosen business development. The included members are the 5 members as shown. If you wish to write a dynamic lookup to make the members dynamic, you can. And you can exclude people and then OK it. So what this means is when you're now actually working in the service desk, what normally happens when you open an incident is that if you have a list selection, say a business service group, and you're assigning it to your user, as you select the assignee button, it returns everybody in your entire IT organization. There's no sub-filtering. So in this instance, I'm going to choose tier 1 and click assignee, and you'll see there's a lot of users being returned. Now that is out of the box functionality, and there's no way to tie this list property to a group of users except for with case dimensions. So if I go to business development and we click assignee, we can now see that it is only returning the people, which means your staff are more productive. Tier 1 staff do not always understand everyone and every team. So this helps the routing of the ticket and the accuracy in relation to where tickets go for support. And it's ever so more applicable to global companies where people are everywhere globally. How else do you manage staff service levels typically drive staff behavior. And the issue with out-of-the-box service level management is that you cannot feed the service level information to the view. So if you create other views inside the tool, you will not be able to see the SLA information. Now in this instance, you can see operational level information, so your OLA for time to fix and time to respond, and also your SLA for time to fix and time to respond. And you can also see if the user is a VIP. Okay. Now I'm going to show how that's configured in just a minute, but quite simply, we also allow analysts to stop the clock if the business allows them to do so. So there's an extra tick, there's an extra task on the right hand side called stop the clock. Now if you got an alert from Ops Manager and there was a CPU broken and you needed to escalate, you may stop the clock as you escalate to the third party. So in this instance, you hit stop the clock. If the SLA with the third party is 4 hours, you put in your 4 hours, and you can state a comment that says escalated to third party. And this will stop the clock on the SLA whilst Hewlett Packard or Dell or another respond to fix the issue. Now, what this little task also does is it moves the ticket to a pending status. So it falls out of the work queue and doesn't distract your analyst. But there's a workflow that runs 4 hours later and moves it back into an active status. So the analyst knows to chase to ensure the job was done. So it makes service proactive. Now, out of the box, and in this instance where you've got the SLA and OLA information, if you reclassify the work item, the SLA applicable to the rule will be applied. What that means is if you reclassify something from P2, priority 2, to priority 1, if you've written a rule for that, the priority rule for P1 will apply. In certain instances with out of the box, you'll end up with 2 or 3 SLAs running at the one time, and it's not clear who should be working on what. Our SLA feature is embedded within the incident class, the service request class, the activity class, and it's local to the work items. So I'll open up a policy that we've defined previously. So what you'll see here is we are writing the service levels not against queues. Queues make SLA and service manager three-dimensional, and this has a big performance impact. If you create three dimensions, you've got your queue, you've got your work item, and you've got your service level. They're three separate objects. It's three-dimensional. How they look each other up and query each other creates an overhead on performance. What we're doing here is we're allowing you to write a service level directly against the class, which is incident management. So it's ingrained and it speeds up performance. You are not having to create queues, okay? So here we've got the SLA rule. So in this instance, this is the default SLA. If you had business services being fed to service manager from ops manager, you can write your SLA against the business service. Or if you create a group of CIs in the group function, you can write an SLA against that specific group of CIs. So your standard default SLA applies unless you treat something different and lift it out of that pool of default. So quite quickly, this is the policy, and we've got 4 SLAs, one for each priority. If I open the priority 1, this opens just a wizard on top of the policy. So this is where we're writing the service level. The property criteria is incident priority equals 1. The rule is we're using a standard test calendar, which might be Monday to Friday, 8 to 5. It's easy to define the calendar. And then we're basically saying that after 1 hour, send an OLA time to respond. After 2 hours, send an SLA time to respond. The OLA time to fix is 3, and if we've got 3 support tiers, we should make the SLA time to fix 9 hours. If we want to trigger email notification, should someone not meet the defined OLA or SLA, we merely tick a box and choose a group of users whom we want the escalation to go to. So you would have different groups of users to escalate to based on each parameter. You're then okaying that, and that's basically updating your SLA, which then gets applied to your work items. You can write your SLAs and OLAs against incident, change, problem, service request, and against activity templates. So it's a lot more mature than what you get out of the box. We do have a feature that's in development. There's three that are being released before Christmas. One's called Advanced Views. So Advanced Views means currently when you're in your work item view, you've got activities, changes, incidences, problems, and service requests. We're writing a tool that allows you to group all the work items against any analyst into three or four folders, and you define the criteria. So if their role in Service Manager allows them to see the different classes, i.e. incident, change, or problem, they will see everything in one folder. So they don't have to jump between many folders. We're also allowing you to state the width of the columns in the view, the ordering of the columns in the view, and the naming of the columns in the view. Some of the classes have different language for different things. So we're allowing you to update that so it's consistent in the analyst's view. We've also got AD update, which means there's a large construction firm we're working with who have lots of staff who move about and change in the business. So their AD details always need updating. So just by opening the user class and updating the user's details in the user class and saving that, it will write to Active Directory as well as to Service Manager to keep both tools in sync and keep you the most accurate employee details. If you write only to Service Manager, AD will overwrite that evening when the sync reruns. So we're making it write both ways. So there are examples of how we're helping you better manage your staff through better views, through better SLAs, and by allowing you to group your users against the list properties. Making your users work better is also about workflow. So how you notify people and communicate to them. Out of the box, it's quite difficult to make certain things happen. So I'm just going to go back to the PowerPoint here to show you some examples and then go back to Service Manager. So we've written a tool, another management pack called Workflow Optimizer. So again, this sits as a management pack inside Service Manager. And there are certain things here that you cannot do. And there are certain things that you would have to write hundreds, if not thousands, of workflows to achieve. And with us, you can write one workflow and achieve what you would need to write 700 or 800 with out of the box. So like there's some customers we've went into where they've had an excess of 800-900 workflows, and we've reduced it to about 60. The impact on performance is massive. So I'm working on a ticket, and I'm going to reassign it to someone different. Out of the box, it's not possible. So we've got, you would write hundreds of workflows. You'd have to write a rule for every employee. We've got one workflow that deals with that. If someone updates a list property, creating a notification of that is also possible. And creating the notification to go to the right people, if you're using our support group function, is also possible. So if I reassign to the application team responsible for SharePoint, they're not typically logged into the service desk. There's only five of them. Let's notify all five should something be assigned to their work team. This will basically take care of it by writing one workflow. Others are using it to drive integration via email with other third-party systems. So if something is allocated to the development team, scrape certain properties out of the work item, inject it in an email, and send it via email to a Jira system or to another third-party system where it can inject the work item, update it, and then you're working through the Exchange connector to communicate in relation to the work item. So it's a simple, easy way to drive email integration, which isn't possible out of the box. So I'll go back and just show you the... Go back can show workflow optimizer. So in this folder, we have a group of examples of workflows that we've written. The incident assigned to assignee, so it's basically saying one assigned person is escalating to another assignee. So you specify the event criteria, and you've got a list of items you can choose from. In this instance, we're stating if the related recipient is updated. The specified criteria, we're not looking at any properties on the ticket, we're just saying if the assignee is updated, but you might say notify if it's a P1 and the assignee is updated. Assignee criteria, some people like to say email someone on the service desk at tier one if the assignee is blank, because no one's working on it. So in this instance, we're not applying a template or stating criteria. So here we have assigned to user, and we're sending the assigned to user notification. So I'll just add that back in so you can see. What we're doing here is we're stating the condition at the top of the criteria at the top, and here we're stating who's going to get the communication and what they're going to get. So we've already created the notification assigned to user notification. And now when we click add, it's asking us whom should this communication go to. And it's not only just taking back the properties of the incident, it's also taking back the extended properties of the objects relational to the incident. So you've got a long list of properties to choose from. So in this instance, we're going to go assign to user and add. And then that's basically it. Now, there's lots of options here. A normal demo of this with an enterprise customer would take about 40 minutes. So I'm just jumping through it quickly. If we OK that, it writes to the CMDB. With another tool, you'd have had to write a rule for every single person that's in the IT support desk. So if you're a big company with 100 or 60 people, that's 60 workflows. With us, it's one. We also have a tool called auto assignment. So what we see companies use this for is medium and larger size companies have lots of third party monitoring systems. So might have something different for Linux or Unix, something different for Oracle, something different for AIX or a mainframe. So if you've got lots of monitoring systems sending information to you, you're gonna have to write a lot of templates and then a lot of workflows to deal with those templates to apply the right logic to them. So in the larger clients that we work with, they like to have the ability just to not have to create templates and have something that auto profiles and routes the ticket to the right team. So in this instance, we're saying network assignment team, it's a SolarWinds escalation. We drag down, we're stating the criteria, the title in the subject line, or the title in the ticket states SolarWinds. What we do is we're escalating that to the support group. Now, because we have support group integrated where you can create a group of the users, the email notification will go to the right group of users so they know when something is assigned to them via auto escalation. So this is coming in through the Exchange connector, and then this picks it up and routes it to the right team without the need to create a template. So asset management is also a hot topic for lots of customers. So we've also extended an asset management capability into Service Manager. So the business data is coming from the user class in Service Manager. So all your existing employees, they'll come in automatically. If you have third-party contacts that you work with, it's easy to add them to the user class. So Hewlett Packard, Aircom, British Telecom, whomever, Deutsche Telekom, you just basically add them in the user class and they become usable within within asset management. We're allowing you to set up hardware catalogs and software catalogs. So again, it's just wizard driven. Create new hardware catalog. You're going through a wizard, a four-step wizard. What's happening is you're defining what the replenish levels are. You're choosing the vendor, which is a company. So we've created companies as a class inside Service Manager. You choose the asset type. This is a list. If it's not your language, you can update it. You can state whether the asset is to be returned, if there's sensitive data and it must be cleansed. The expected lifetime warning threshold, so if there's three in stock, that means that's as low as you should go. But when there's only four in stock, you'll get a warning so that you know to start the procurement process. If you're going to project this onto the self-service portal, you can also put in an estimated cost so that the user requesting can be respectful if it's expensive. And then you've got controls to state whether it appears in the self-service portal or not. This is useful if you're updating your catalog over time. Instead of having to reconfigure the portal as you reconfigure asset management, the asset manager merely chooses no, and then it disappears from the portal. And the new catalog replacing the old, he publishes and it becomes available. Now, the main difference between our asset management and the competitions, there's two. On a price point, we've been getting very positive feedback is one area. But from a compliance perspective, when your hardware vendors deliver the assets to your delivery depot, they also send a spreadsheet to the asset manager with a list of all the serial numbers. So you can import the serial numbers with the asset type into the catalog. And what it does is it creates you an object or an asset object for every item that is on the spreadsheet. Now you have serial number, and the serial number is a unique identifier. The serial number is also picked up by Config Manager from the Net BIOS. So instead of your asset manager having to click through hundreds of screens to join up the logical to the physical data, in this instance, a workflow does it for you. So if I click here to view CI details, this will return the logical data relative to the asset. So now we're in the CI form. And likewise, if your analyst had opened the ticket and it had an ops manager alert stating the CPU was broken, they would click view hardware asset details and it will open the hardware asset form. In this way, you've got your contract information also associated here at the bottom. It feeds through. If the primary owner, if in Config Manager, the primary owner is identified, it will feed through. Now in this instance, you can see there's no location information. If I were to put in Anastasia, you'll see that her AD information is now following the asset. And given that the majority of your assets are user related, this is an easy way then to identify the location, the cost center, the department, and the primary owner for each asset. And we've created about 16 to 20 out of the box reports that sit in the SSRS area of Service Manager, where we're showing you by cost center, by department, by geography, different types of assets and different lifecycle statuses, the type of information that you want on a dashboard as an asset manager. So this is hardware asset management in an extremely rushed way. What we've also enabled is software asset management. So with software asset management, SharePoint is the one that we've put in here. So license discovered and license procured. As you put in your financial information, it will increase the count on license procured. In the library and Service Manager, you've got the feature of grouping assets. So if we say create software license compliance group, so this is an extension on grouping again that we've did. It's part of asset management. We'll call this SharePoint compliance group. What we can do here is create a dynamic role that will say for each server or each computer identified running SharePoint, give us a count of one in relation to licenses being used. So the included members, you can add them manually, which is not advised, or you can write a dynamic group. So here, we'll go for combination classes. We'll type software. So this is writing a projection or a query that says for all the computers that has the product name. Now, it would be the product code that you would use. I just don't know the product code at hand. But you would put in a dynamic rule that says, bring us back all the computers that are running SharePoint. Now, this excluded feature is important because when you create this group, it will go out into the CMDB, return all the computers running SharePoint. You will then get your count. You might not be compliant, but the asset manager needs to review that. So, but the fact that we have created a group, the asset manager can look at the group and see the members of the group. And there might be certain members he or she wants to exclude, either for development purposes and you don't need to license them, depends on your contract. So ones that may not need licensing, you can then go back to your group creation, the SharePoint group, and exclude those members from the count. And the data feeds through to the software compliance view, so you can see what you're using based on procurement and what you're licensed for based on live discovery in the CMDB. The other pack that we have, again, in development is one that's called Enterprise Change. So within companies, change is normally driven in a business-aligned manner. So you normally have applications and you've got business owners who approve change, and then you have people who are assigned the work to implement the change specific to the business service. So we have extended the business service object where you can put in the change manager and the change assignee. And when you create a change, when you add a business service to the change, those people become associated to the change and they also get written down into the activities in change management. So your team do not have to open up all the activities and configure whom it is that's responsible. It just flows aligned to your policy for change and you define it, therefore your analysts cannot make mistakes. The last feature I'd like to show you is one which is called Send Email. Now, inside Service Manager, believe it or not, when you're in service requests, it's not possible to write out to the user to request additional information. So what we have enabled inside Service Manager as standard with incident management, you can request user input, but what you type here goes to the user. And there's no title in the email. It's just got the ticket number. There's no thank you, the service desk. It's not personalized. So what we allow is for on send email, you can choose whom it's going to. So it's not just the related recipients. You can actually put in recipients from the user class. Can be anybody. And also with CC, the attachments you can add can be related to the work item. So you're pulling objects directly from the work item into the ticket to send out, or you're finding something off your local network. Now, as the user is choosing whom to write to, they can also choose a template and then edit the text and update it. When the email is sent, it is getting written into the log of each work item. When the employee responds, it also comes in through the Exchange connector and it keeps the communication joined up inside Service Manager. So it just gives you an easier way to write to the employees. So quite simply, we work with partners with Service Manager. There are also clients that we work with directly. So if partners introduce us to customers, there's a partner agreement where the customer is ring-fenced and protected to the partner who brings us the client first. If the client approaches us directly, we work with the client. The products can be sold individually, so if you just want one or two, but we also offer what we call an eCal license, or copy on Microsoft. So typically, if you want SLA, asset management, and the portal, which would be the three most popular, the price point becomes such that you get everything that I've just shown you and future developments that we make. So there's an incentive to go for everything. But that's a very quick whirlwind demonstration on how we believe you should make Service Manager service aligned and make it enterprise. The guys who have organized the event here at System Center Universe have put in a lot of effort, so it'd be very good if you could give some feedback just on the session and what you have thought of this week. But if you have any questions, the floor is open for all of you. Thank you. For the change management one, business service, I have a different environment I can go into, right? When we create all this, we typically do it for customers, but we work with the customers where they know we're doing it, and we productize it as we do it. So could we cut the recording at this stage, guys, and just keep it to the end? Because if I go into a different environment, I don't want to be putting it up, if you know what I mean. So.